Live from Miami, Florida.
I am Linda.
And I am Bella.
And this is our podcast, Mostly Peaceful Latinas, where every week we will discuss current events, politics, pop culture,
and everything else related to the state of the clown world.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Mostly Peaceful Latinas. I am your host, Linda.
And I'm your host, Bella.
And please don't forget to share, like, and subscribe. And we are officially welcoming Far Right Latina Summer today on the podcast. It's going to be amazing. We have so much to talk about. And yeah, I'm going to let Bella take the
What a week. What a week for our people.
It's been exactly what we have been asking for the last 4 years, 4 or 5 years, right?
Fact.
For the media to finally acknowledge the far right Latinas in America who are going to save this country.
How long have we been saying the Latinas are going to be the one to save the country?
For a very long time.
For a very long time.
And it's not to alienate people, because I have heard that there are like groypers and stuff like that, like telling Myra Flores on Twitter that stop focusing on race and you're alienating people and whatnot. But here's the reality of the world. Okay, politics is a business, no different than you selling this Fiji water. And when you have a business, you segment people. You market to specific demographics. It doesn't matter if you want to say, yeah, we're all Americans, we're under the flag, under the Constitution. But the reality is that we are divided by races, and each race is different and things appeal to them different. So to us, this is a momentum that we want to capitalize. And it's not because, you know, like I told people today, it's just funny that being pro-God, pro-family, pro-country is now being far right. Okay. We talked about this extensively. The left has gone so far left than anything that is moderate, anything that is pro-America, anything that is pro-God, you're automatically an extremist. So we're going to ride the wave. It's going to be a far-right Latina summer. We're inviting all allies. If you're Asian, if you're white, if you're black, we don't care who you are. It's an actual inclusive movement, unlike all the other movements.
Truly inclusive. This summer, everyone can be a far-right Latina.
Absolutely.
True.
Absolutely.
Stand for God, family, and country, and that's it. That's truly it. That was
Join
the
us.
Attack.
Join us.
It's so dope and based out here. Honestly, we're just doing really amazing things. You know, I don't think we've ever discussed the story of the gentleman that approached us at the restaurant.
We did last
did
episode.
We? Oh, okay, mm-hmm. We did talk about it.
Yeah. Basically how we were approached, if you didn't hear the last episode real quick, we were approached by a man and his wife, Caucasians, and the man didn't even want his wife to follow us on social media because he was scared that his business was going to get canceled. So when you have a fear of being canceled or labeled as an extremist because you follow brown women on the internet that post based content, there's a problem.
And we can't pretend that the hierarchy doesn't exist, where social justice warriors feel like the hierarchy of victimization is very real. So if that's the game that they want to play, then I myself am also a minority and I am going to play that game. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're going to discredit an entire demographic of voters as far right simply for having conservative values, then we're going to absolutely embrace that. We're going to own it. And we're going to capitalize on it.
You're going to hate us.
The fact that you called us far right Latinas.
Absolutely. So
let's talk about the queen of far right Latinas.
Let's talk about Myra Flores. Obviously, Myra is a congresswoman now, and she is going to run again, right? Because it was a special election. So now she has to face a Democrat candidate in November. So we understand that Myra Flores can't be memeing and trolling and doing this like we do. But hey, we're content creators. We can do whatever we want.
That's why we're here, Myra.
And we're meme her away. So that's what we're here for, to make Myra cool, to make sure that she wins in November and to take over Latino culture.
And make sure that she's not the only Latino that wins. This is absolutely a wave. Latinos understand, it's unfortunate, but I think that what I've witnessed over the last couple of years is that Latinos have a certain appreciation for the freedoms and the liberties that are provided to them from the United States because they fled countries that didn't permit that for them.
Absolutely.
So they truly understand the value of what this country stands for. And because they've already lost their home countries to violence, to communism, socialism, to bad politics, because they've already lost their countries, they're going to fight like hell to preserve this one. And I'm stoked to see not just what Myra's going to do, but what
all
other
the other women. There's women mm-hmm. running in Virginia. There's women here in Florida. Obviously, this all started with the New York Times article called The Rise of the Far Right Latina. And it was specifically about Myra Flores, where they said that her campaign slogan, which is God, Family, and Country, meant to appeal to traditional values, which is what we've been saying for a very long time. And they self-admit that in this article, where Latino values are conservative values, and we come from a very traditional culture. The problem is that it has not been translating to the ballot box. It hasn't been translating to politics. So in the Rio Grande and the Rio Grande Valley, you know, what do you call it, area, whatever it's called, this article says that they have been politically liberal yet cultural conservative. Church pews are packed on Sundays, American flags wave from their poles and front lawns, and they really like law enforcement. So those are all things that we see in the Republican Party for the most part and conservatives. However, for the last 50 plus years, they've been voting for Democrats. Why is that?
Well, Myra's district in particular has actually right. been Democrat for the last 100 years, which is what makes this so historic and such a big moment of the pendulum swinging the other way. You know, as you mentioned, here is a municipality, if you will, that's known for being conservative in the way that they exist. They go to church, they're patriots. And then you have a media that does a complete disservice to it, which I believe is why it doesn't transition over to the ballot box, is that for a long time, people weren't paying attention. They were right. taking care of their families. They were going to work. They were doing their things. And now they're in a position where things have gotten so bad that when they do start paying even the slightest bit of attention, and we've discussed this before, it radically changes your views.
But also, and I hate to cut you off, and I've said this for the last 5 years since I've been on social media. When you have two stations that these people watch, whether they're immigrants or second generation, whatever, Univision and Telemundo, which are owned legacy media, and all they push is pro-Democrat propaganda, of course you're going to have the majority of the Latino voters vote Democrat. We have no other
representation
except those two channels. And then of course now George Soros comes in, buys all, you know, 11 radio stations, because the little margin or that we've been chipping away from the Democrats, they realize that it's because, or they think that it's because of disinformation, so they had to buy that off. What are conservatives on our side doing to counter that? Nothing.
Because it's all about who controls the narrative, right? It's not even about what's truth anymore. It's who's pumping the most amount of money mm-hmm. into controlling the narrative. And it's an issue that conservatives just aren't doing enough for one another.
Absolutely.
You have a multimillionaire like George Soros drop, how much was it, $60
million? I think it was $80
million.
$80 million
in order to be able to buy off these small but very influential radio stations. And there was no counter move from...
None.
Some wealthy Republican somewhere in that said media is important, Spanish media is important. And I mean, I'm not going to make pretend that that's not disheartening, but it's very much the reason why we were so inspired to start the podcast.
And obviously we're like self-funded and we're doing this on our own and we're just trying to get traction and stuff like that. So we can't compete against an $80 million spent from freaking George Soros. But this should start opening up the eyes and ears and start getting the Republican side people with money and say, hey, we can't get $5 million into Latino media to start our own. It's not going to be a TV station, but maybe it's just all social media based. I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying it's something that our side really needs to start considering, because we want the Latino vote. We want the Black vote. But what are you doing to get it?
Well, I mean, certainly both sides of the aisle do a lot more for the Black vote than they've ever done for the Latino vote. And I think Absolutely. That it has to do with a complete disconnect on culture, on who we are culturally. Mm-hmm. So when you have us represented by J-Lo, like we spoke about in the last show, or tacos, or you just simplify us down to foods or celebrities, it takes away from the very culturally rich representation that is the Latino demographic.
The truly diverse.
And yeah. I don't think that either party gets it right. You know, Latinos are not represented just by Mexicans.
Right.
Latinos are not represented by I was thinking about it on the ride over here today, how anytime that you step out of the United States, we're not called Latinos. We're called Cubans or Colombians or Venezuelans or Argentinos.
About our community in Miami.
Correct. There is a representation of our differences down here. And then that never translates into the main stage, where you have politicians trying to place a blanket over conservative Latinos the same way that they would, for example, the Black vote. And it's just, it doesn't translate the same way. So I believe that we are standing in a very pivotal moment in time, where the Latino vote is going to start demanding a lot more. And that demand,
and we should demand a lot
absolutely.
More.
Absolutely.
And it's not so much about giving, because some people think it's like, oh, they just want more immigration to come in and they want welfare and this and that. No, that's really not what we want, right?
That's not what we're representing.
At all. And when you think about it, even the illegal immigrants, right? Somebody that is illegal in this country and it's working, you know, under the table for someone else or whatever it is, like, they're not asking for anything for free. Again, we're not excusing illegal immigration. This is not about that. They want to work. They want to be able to wash their cars, eat and send money back to their families or whatever it is. They're not here asking for free shit. It's actually more of the refugees and the people coming through the border and presenting themselves at these families, the ones that get all this money to spend, the ones that get shelter and stuff.
Well, when you have
whatnot.
A wide open border that's offering you checks and phones and places to live from the moment that you cross through, think about who are the first people that are going to make that voyage over here. It's going to be the people that are out looking for a free handout. I know plenty of families that want a legal path to immigration. I've been in staffing for many years of my career, and one of the things that always took me back was, particularly living here in South Florida, was when you would have somebody who was exiled, because I'm not going to call it immigration, when you have somebody exiled from a country like, say, Venezuela, somebody who would come to me and they're like, I used to be a doctor or I used to be an attorney, and now I'm willing to clean floors if I have to, as long as I have a way. That's incredibly cruel to me. It's cruel in the sense where a lot of these people end up taking whatever jobs it is that they can because they don't have legal papers or because they don't speak the language. And it's incredibly cruel that there isn't a pathway that prepares individuals not just to come into this country, but to be successful in this country. I've always been an advocate of requiring to some degree that at least a novice level of the English language be learned.
But that's what Trump wanted to do with the immigration reform and make it merit-based. And obviously we had Congress stop him from doing that. So, you know, they don't want that. As a naturalized citizen, obviously I had to go through a process to get citizenship. And I can tell you right now that it was a joke. You know, like, obviously knew full English. I studied what I had to study and whatnot. But it was like 10 questions. I could see people next to me that did not speak English kind of just like rehearsing the lines and the answers to these questions. And it's just like, you know, yeah, maybe you were here for a very long time. You're a permanent resident. You go through the process. You meet the requirements. And now you do this test and you swear and blah, blah, blah. But like, most people don't even know the national anthem.
I mean, but like even that.
They don't even know like who fought the Civil War. Like it's really unfortunate. But, you know.
I go back to where I care about Latinos. I care about Latinos succeeding within this country. And I think that if there's no due process in getting in, it's almost like handing somebody $1 million for no reason, how long before they blow it, right? Mm-hmm. It's like there has to be some kind of framework that exists that creates a pathway, again, not just for citizenship, that's so trivial to me, that creates a pathway for success within this country. And you don't do that by handouts and giving people welfare from the minute that they work here. My parents were here for 30 days in this country before my dad found his first job within a warehouse. So he was like fixing things or whatnot. And my dad, both my parents have worked very hard for other people and for themselves. And I remember when my father turned 65 and he was old enough to collect his Social Security check, he's like, I'm not going to take it. Well, what do you mean you're not going to take it? You got to take it as your Social Security. No, it's welfare. It's like, no, you got to go through the conversation. Dad, it's not welfare. Those are your money, blah, blah, blah. But the idea is like, my dad is the standard Latino masculine male figure within a household. Yeah. And there is the majority of our culture, that machista attitude does rely a lot around hard work and working and providing for your family. And handouts are not something mm-hmm. that is descriptive in any capacity to Latino culture.
Absolutely not.
We're a hardworking demographic. We're a demographic that likes to work hard. Yeah. It's why people make jokes about us working fields or cleaning bathrooms or whatever it is, because yeah. we don't mind rolling up our sleeves. We like working and earning hours. So what's being created is very similar to what you see in Cuba now, where you look at generations of Cuba that maybe first came, you know, like Peter Pan era, maybe even those that came during it, Mariel, in the 80s, that very much played an important part in building the city of Miami. They were pivotal to that. But that Cuban doesn't necessarily exist when you're four generations into communism in Cuba now. The expectation of what happens when you get into the States is very different than somebody that came with nothing 40, 50 years ago and said, I'm going to turn nothing into something. Now, like so many other immigrants coming through wide open borders, because even Cubans are now flying into countries in South America in order to be able to cross the border. Mm-hmm. They're not because the country is handing them things. They're like, well, if everybody else is getting handed stuff, I want handed stuff too.
Absolutely.
And then it creates the vicious cycle where now you don't have immigrants that are proving their worth. And yes, being an American is a luxury and it is a gift. That isn't something that should just be handed to every single person. I wish that we could. Yeah. I wish we could open up wide open borders and have everybody from all over the world come to the U.S. We are the number one individual. We are the number one country in letting immigrants in. But the truth of the matter is that there needs to be some kind of checks and balances to ensure that
that's actually what's hurting the Democrats. Why are the Democrats hurting in the southern border counties, cities? Because of the wide open border. Mm-hmm. This is no longer a winning policy for Democrats. For most demographics, maybe the blacks are still on it. I don't know why, because it hurts their demographic as well. But it's part of what they're saying in this article that they're criticizing Myra for, is that they say that she goes to the extreme. That because, you know, she talks about the border, that she has mentioned QAnon stuff before, the election fraud or whatnot. That's what has labeled her an extremist, along with two other Latina women, Monica de la Cruz in McAllen and Cassie Garcia in Laredo. I saw that Monica de la Cruz was tweeting last week about, oh, you know, they're labeling us fraud by Latinas. Here's my message to these women. I know Myra follows. I don't know about the other ones. You can't let the mainstream media bother you, even though it does, right? Like you can't sit here and continue to say, oh, I'm not the real far-right Latina. I'm not the real extremist. I'm not a Q-tard. I'm not this. It doesn't matter. This narrative is not working for voters. And it's not working for the Democrat Party. If not, they wouldn't be losing in numbers. And we see that. Joe Biden's ratings are down. I think the Latino approval rating is like a 31%. Yeah. This is no longer a winning strategy. Xenophobe, transphobe, racist. At this point, it's a joke. And especially for Trump supporters, because we've been so desensitized by these names that it's just like, all right, fine.
Give me another name.
Because we're mostly people that want to be left alone and we're moderate, right?
Correct.
We're not trying to force you into church to become a Catholic or a Protestant or whatever it is. They, however, do push their ideology on you. And if you don't accept their ideology, then you get canceled and shamed and vilified and your life is destroyed. Not anymore, because I do feel like the cancel culture face is kind of like waving out.
Well, I mean, as long as we continue to take it in stride as we are right now, Faray Latina Summer is a perfect example of
Absolutely.
That. It's like, you're not going to shame me.
You're not going to shame me for my values.
By giving me some, you know, lyrical name to categorize what my values are. It's like, okay, so do because I'm God-believing and I support my family and I believe in this country, I'm a far-right Latina, you can call me a pile of, like, heaping dog shit and it wouldn't make a difference to me because those are my values and I'm going to continue to stand for them. So for these women that are in these positions where I know that they can't defend themselves like we can, we can be absolute savages and make memes and do all these other things that they cannot do. But to these women, stand strong. Like, you've got the support of voices like ours, of other women that are looking up to you right now and want you to be bold and want you to be strong and don't want you to feel ashamed in any capacity for your values and what it is that you believe in. We need more Myra. We need more Myras. We need more Cassies. We need women like us making moves.
Absolutely.
And not being shamed into softening up.
That happens, and then legacy media, CNN, doubles down on the attack against Myra Flores, saying that she's not the real deal, right? And they always let the Latino reporters write these pieces so they're not labeled as racist. And I guess the reasoning behind why she's not the real deal is because the majority, she doesn't represent the majority of Latino voters who still are mostly Democrat. The funny thing is, though, that they consider a figure or a star someone like AOC, who actually does not represent our culture at all. Not in Puerto Rico, or maybe in Puerto Rico, I don't know. But as far as Latino culture.
First of all, if she was representative of Puerto Rico, her grandmother wouldn't be living in Puerto Rico in a shack that's falling apart.
Literally.
Like, every Puerto Rican friend I have will move back to the island to make sure that their family is taken care of. So no, she's not a representation of any Latina values.
It's...
You know what's another thing that did... That's ironic? How for the first time they call her a far right Latina. Now it's not Latinx anymore. So when they're referring to us, I'm glad that they got that part right.
Right.
At a minimum, they didn't call it the rise of the far right Latinx.
Well, yesterday with Joe Biden's little speech, wasn't that called a inclusivity Latinx luncheon?
Well,
or
Unidos Us, who put the luncheon together, they pride themselves as a civil advocacy group for Latinos.
Right. Yeah. But I think they label that event as a Latinx. And, you know, moving on to Joe Biden, which is just another... Just another person trying to, you know, appeal to the... I think the biggest problem here is that these people have millions of dollars for marketing and they just can't get someone who just gives you three lines for a speech that would actually make sense, right? You... are the...
She just
went
down a list of, like, how to insult every
demographic. But somebody did that for her. Right. Like, she doesn't do that herself. That's my point. My point is that somebody wrote that speech for her. She's getting paid for that. And they chose possibly the worst person for the job.
Somebody that has, you know, cultural Latinx studies and paid for some kind of degree in a fancy Latinx title and... Again, both sides are going to fail because I don't want to make excuses for the right. The right doesn't capture the Latino vote either.
I don't.
It's like, we're just such a diverse group of individuals. And to think that any one character or any one reference would be able to be descriptive of our diversity is insulting.
You know that when she said the word bodega, which she totally butchered, you know, that's not even like a Latino word. Like, that's not even like a Spanish word. That's like a... made up word type of thing. Like, there's no bodega. Like, we don't have bodegas in Miami at all. That's like a Bronx, New York type of stuff.
I've always known the term bodega. It's just like, you know, little store. Like, in Cubans call them timbiriches.
Yeah, like, it's like la tiendita. You know what I mean?
Tiendita, right.
But
I don't even know why. How is that something that you praise? Like, it's like they're quite literally corner stores are what bodegas are.
And then also,
like the bodegas. It's like, who the fuck TikTok references bodegas.
It's a literal kind corner of store where, like, you just get to get fast stuff instead of going to the
supermarket. Like, that's what we have to be proud of as Latinos, is bodegas, tacos, and Escada perfume.
And then what the fuck is a Miami Blossom?
Yeah.
Like, what is even a Miami Blossom?
I did I
know you did the research, but when I first heard it, I'm like, why are Miamians not making a big deal? Like, what the fuck are Miami Blossoms?
Never heard of that in my
entire
life.
Never heard of that.
Never heard of the term Miami Blossoms. So we looked, and guys, Miami Blossoms is the name of an Escada perfume from like the 1980s, Año de la Coneta, of my grandmother. And this was the reference that Jill's speech made to Miami, because apparently she must think that if Escada named the perfume after Miami Blossoms, then it must be an actual thing. But no, Jill, it was not. The Miami Blossoms were a fail. Your bodegas were a fail. Your breakfast burritos were a fail. We do not like you. Latinos do not approve.
We don't fuck with you.
No, like at all.
You're not invited to carnasadas.
Yeah, you're not
invited to Sancocho Sundays.
Absolutely.
You're not invited to Sancocho Sundays. It is absolutely not happening. I think that they're going to have a pretty hard time come the midterms, because this is going to piss people off, but I don't think as bad as like what's actually happened with the economy and stuff like that. You have a lot of people that are pissed off.
Do you think that this is proactive or reactive?
Which part?
The attack on the Latino vote. Do you think that it's reactive to what happened in 2020, where they started seeing the switch in demographic when Trump gained 10 points of the Latino demographic in 2020? Is all of this reactionary to that and where it could lead? Or are they being, are they trying to discredit the Latino vote before it happened now in 2022?
I think it's probably both. I think they're doing a, you know, kind of like how they discredited the whites that voted for Trump the first time. And, oh, look at all these scary white supremacists, asylum majority, you know. I think it's the same thing, which is why they're building up the narrative that it's a race and there's a lot of internalized white, you know, like racism amongst Latinos. They have been building up that narrative to try to, you know,
discredit
the vote. But I also think it is a reaction from the 2020 elections, where they saw that, oh shit, yeah, you know, we still won the Latino vote, but we won it by a lot less, and they keep trending down and down and down. And now they see that it's just not they're trending down because these Latinos are voting for somebody like Donald Trump, but that also there's Latinos willing to run for Congress, for state houses. You know, look at Rob here in Miami. So I think that it's a complex and double-sided, or to answer your question,
solution to their problem.
Yes, that is what it is. And I don't think it's going to stop. Oh, they'll probably come after us Latino, like,
well, we're
media.
Not stopping.
Well,
yeah.
We're not stopping.
Not, we know
Skittles, a remote control. No. There's the hooker videos. It's, you know, I hate to be the person that says, if this were, you know, our side, but it's absolutely true. They accuse Donald Trump Jr. of being a cokehead. It's what they say, that he talks real fast, and so he's on coke, and he's a degenerate. They've actually never seen any of the Trump kids.
Meanwhile.
In any sort of strange behavior at all, ever.
Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, is smoking crack out of
it's
a hooker's
Wayne.
Ass.
He's literally having a whole discussion and arguing with one of his hookers about, oh, this is not 22.2. This is actually 207 without the bag. Bruh.
The absolute state. And the fact, bruh. And here's the thing. The fact that this is the second leak. The second leak. And the best thing are the memes from our side of people like, all right, great. Like another 37 gigs of Hunter's cock and nothing's going to come of
nothing.
It. Nothing. So he had his dad saved under P2P.
Yeah. What does that mean?
Especially when we know that they found the daughter's diary and she talked about inappropriate showers with her dad. Allegedly, there's images on this phone of phone conversations, FaceTime conversations between Hunter Biden and his underage niece that are not fully dressed. So, Pedo Pete. The images of him with his underage niece while he was also banging his mom, that also happened to be his dead brother's widow, because winning family all around.
It was a stripper, right? He got pregnant or something?
Oh, then he got the stripper pregnant. It's no. He was Bo's actual legitimate wife and his family, which is what's the granddaughter's name?
Natalie.
Oh, which is Natalie's mom. That's it just the fact that the mainstream media is just like whatever. And you know what? I thought it's legitimately.
Well, they're already
last year when we were talking about the Hunter Biden laptop, my account got taken down and I was labeled QAnon. Okay, cool. If anybody who believes in the laptop and the fact that the pictures are real or QAnon, then fine. Call me whatever.
Well, they're taking down the. That's why I didn't repost anything. I didn't share it at all because they are already removing the content on Instagram mm-hmm. from accounts that were sharing some of the edited videos.
Right.
So I didn't even mess with that because I just knew that was going to happen.
I never do.
There, it's, you know, social media has, especially Facebook and Instagram. Facebook obviously helped secure the election mm-hmm. Via Zuckbucks. So they have it in with the White House. And I'm sure it was a phone call before they said switch the algorithm and ban every single post of, you know, the first son out here smoking crack with hookers. So it's probably going to go
Memorial
nowhere.
Memorial weekend in Miami. Brother, have a care in the world, bro.
Dude, there was another one of him like running on the beach with just like a bomber jacket, like naked. It's just insane shit. But it's just going to go down the drain.
It's going to go down the drain. Like, I hate to disappoint everyone, but it's like after you've looked at, you know, 3 hours worth of Hunter Biden's junk, like nothing's probably going to come out of it because you just told, I didn't even realize.
And what Joe are you Biden gonna say?
Joe hasn't even apologized. It was her speechwriter that apologized.
It was her speechwriter.
How about recognition from Joe Biden, like apologizing for just being that completely ignorant where she has to completely rely on a speechwriter? How about a statement by Unidos Us, an organization that's supposed to represent Latino civil rights, and you allow this woman to go in there and compare Latinos to tacos? Like, how about statements from these people? There's no accountability ever for the left. And it's what's actually quite infuriating is that the people on the right love to hold the people on the right accountable.
Absolutely.
For everything.
For everything. For They'll everything. Drop you for anything. It's what Andy Fursella was actually just messaging me. He's like, bro, I'm pissed off at the fact that like people are not that mad about the tacos comment. They're just not. And I'm like, they won't be. And they're not going to hold her accountable.
And she's not
gonna say anything. She'll go into the next Latino convention next month and say something stupid, and nothing will happen. Moving on, we have a fight between Elon Musk and Trump, which I think it's been a long time coming. So, if you guys remember, I do because I keep track of Trump's predictions and wizardry. But Trump said that Elon Musk was not going to buy Twitter and that it was a bad deal for $40 billion or whatever because of the amount of fake accounts and bots. And people kind of dismissed Trump. Even Trump's base was like, oh, Trump is just hating because he wants people on Truth Social and stuff. And it turns out to be true. And Elon Musk, canceled his bid or wants to retract the bid to buy Twitter because of the amount of fake accounts and bots. And
I personally don't feel that he was ever going to buy Twitter. Like, I'm completely on par with the theory that, you know, with the trial going on and Truth Social launching, it was just the timing was too right where it's like drive the traffic away from Truth by giving people the idea that maybe Twitter will come back and that it'll be a fair place. I think that the entire idea was to take away the attention that Truth Social was getting at that time in an effort to preemptively stop, you know, massive downloads or whatever.
I did see that Elon Musk posted some meme. Obviously, he could be doing it to kind of like throw off the scent. But I did see that he posted a meme of him like alluding to the fact that he bought Twitter to expose how many bots and fake accounts there really is. Kind of like a 5D chess move on his part.
Maybe.
Which is it could be true. But, you know, Elon Musk, I guess he got pissed off because Trump called him out during a rally this past week saying that he was another like scam artist or fake or whatever because he said, I've never voted for a Republican before, but I'll vote for Mayor Flores. And Trump said, well, you know, I guess he's a liar because he told me he voted for me.
Burn.
So he got called out and then Elon Musk responded by saying that it was time for Trump to put away his hat and sail off to the sunset and just, you know, step out of the political world, that it was his time to go. Mind you, Trump has only been in politics for 4 years, but it pisses Elon Musk that much that he wants Trump gone after only being in politics for 5 years.
Yeah, you know, I think, and we had talked about this in the episode where we discussed Elon, where there were so many conservatives that thought that Elon was purchasing Twitter for them. Mm-hmm. Twitter was never about conservatives. Elon is looking out for Elon and making the power moves that are good for Elon, and that was never about conservatives. But I think that he does a really good job at playing into the emotions of conservatives, because he drops little references.
He's just like Joe Rogan, like
red pilled or whatever it is. And at the end of the day, like we talked about it, the guy advocates he's for a China style communism. He's, you know, wants to implant brain chips into people. Like truly, there's not really a lot about his way of thinking other than maybe the way that he holds on to his coin that would be considered conservative.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, even the fact that Tesla is offering abortions for his employees, you know, he talks about wanting or the population of the world decreasing and how the birth rates are decreasing. That's so dangerous for humanity. Has 10 kids of his own with like 3 different women. Cool. He wants to populate the earth. But then you're also paying for your employees to go get abortions because you want the women back in their little, you know, cubicles. Working. Like, mm-hmm. he's always been a shady character. Not a fan of Elon Musk at all. I appreciate his intelligence or whatever he has done, Tesla bullshit, but I don't trust him. Just like I don't freaking like Joe Rogan. By the way, Joe Rogan supporters came after me last week when I like trashed Rogan. Oh, we're not following you anymore. You're turning off the moderates. I'm like, bro, I don't give a fuck. I've always criticized Joe Rogan because he's a noodle. He folds. He tries to be the centrist moderate, whatever. You moved to Texas to be in a red state, my friend. Probably a state with the most Trump supporters in America. Again, you piece of shit.
Yeah, again, because it's good for bank. Like, yeah, who the hell wants to be paying taxes in California?
Yeah.
So they move for financial reasons, but they still bring their shitty politics to the red states that they move.
And I've
to.
Always said this. There's that one of the most dangerous individuals out there are the social conservatives. Mm-hmm. Is that the word? Is that what it is? The social conservatives. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm a fiscal conservative. Low taxes, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I love trannies. I love the LGBT. Black Lives Matter. Oh, we have to be moderate. Oh, those people fuck it up for the rest of us. Those are some of the most dangerous individuals out there. And those are the people that actually drove cities like New York and Los Angeles to the ground because they were so concerned with Black Lives Matter and the LGBT bullshit that they ended up putting all these people in office. Those people that are moving to Miami and stuff like that, the moderates, the social conservatives, those are the worst type of people to have on your side because they will always fold for social justice movements every single time.
Every single
All they
time.
Want is low taxes while the playing into the LGBT bullshit, the Black Lives Matter, we're not racist, dangerous individuals. I don't want them in the party.
Yeah, they can't be representative. We've said 100 times, you can't fight extremism with moderation, and where you're just trying to play nice with these people for the sake of I just want lower taxes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's not a win. So
moving on.
Should we move on to
absolutely
my favorite topic? My favorite topic. So last week, the National Education Association, the NEA, which is the largest teachers union in the country, but more importantly than that, actually the largest labor union in the United States of America, had their national assembly where they discussed what great plans they have for your children in public school. And some of the stuff on here is
bananas.
Just the fact that these people think that they have any kind of authority over some of these things is beyond me. So let's start with,
I think the craziest part, and Bella is a huge researcher on the teachers union and stuff like that, but I think what's really, really scary here, and that's obviously not scary but concerning more than anything, is that these teachers union, or this one in particular, they want to spend $140,000 for an enemies list in opposition research of all the groups that I guess are turning up the heat at the school boards across the country. Like,
Tell me what
a hit list.
A hit list. An actual hit list and setting aside funds to research people that oppose them. We've already seen this happen down here in South Florida. We've already seen PR companies involved, personal attacks, doxing of parents. We've seen the absolute worst of the attacks by the unions down here. And again, I think one of the most concerning parts for me is that school boards have no power. Because the school boards are owned by the teachers unions. And these teachers unions own the federal government. We know that Carla Matz and is consistently at the White House, as well as all unions are at the White House. Joe Biden openly, the administration openly talked in 2021 how their COVID protocols were being discussed with the teachers union. Why on earth is the teachers union discussing protocol for a global COVID pandemic that affects every single human being in the United States of America, not just those with children?
Well, it was the teachers, the main one, right? What is it called? The National Education Association, right, or whatever, that wanted parents to be labeled as, first they wanted to send the National Guard. That was, they retracted that and they're like, well, just label them as domestic terrorists, right?
Correct.
So part of what the National Education Association is saying is that they passed this resolution, right, for get $140,000 to target their enemies. And they're saying that they want to research or that the research will include probing into the group's funding sources, the leaders of the organizations, connections to known entities that are seeking to dismantle public education, organization headquarters and chapter locations. This is an attack on Moms for Liberty.
A direct attack on Moms for Liberty.
This is an attack on Moms for Liberty.
Have you heard their new terminology?
No.
They call them the K-12 cartel.
Oh, that's actually pretty
cool. No, it's absolutely genius. I loved it too.
Oh, wow. We have another movement in the works.
The K-12 cartel. And it's, again, the biggest fight is against the union. It's not against the school boards, because the school boards are having these back room meetings with the teachers' unions to make decisions despite any involvement that parents want to have. Parents do not have a seat at the table, and the unions have made it very clear. They do not want parents to have a seat in the table. They believe in teacher autonomy, and they believe that parental involvement affects that. So some of the more outlandish things, aside from this hit list that they want to create with funds to be able to target individuals, aside from that, so one of the things that they're going to be advocating for is to remove the language of mother in all teaching materials across the United States. This is something that they're vowing that they're going to fight against, to change the terminology of mother to birthing parent. This is the one of the top priorities for the teachers unions of the United States, is to influence local school boards to stop using the terminology of mother, because apparently it's incredibly offensive to, again, the teachers union. They're not just going to stop there. They're going to advocate for women's reproductive rights, the active act of killing innocent children. The teachers union feels that they should have a say in the influence of the overturning of Roe versus Wade, and that somehow the Supreme Court was biased. What did they call them? They called them extreme.
I don't remember them. They called them so much.
They called them extreme and biased. They made it a direct attack against the
radicalized Supreme Court. Radicalized Supreme Court.
There it
goes. The National Teachers Union president says radicalized Supreme Court delivered a gut punch against abortion rights, separation of church and state, which obviously, why are they even teaching if they don't even understand what separation of church and state means? But here we are.
And then I don't understand, if the advocating is for children, why are we advocating for murdering children? Why is this even a topic that's a priority? Why is there funds being set aside to promote pro-choice or pro-abortion material and propaganda within schools, and our kids don't even know basic American law? They don't know how to balance a checkbook. They can barely do simple math compared to other countries. But let's teach them that mothers are birthing people, because that's a priority. Abortions are a priority. Another thing that they've said is that they are extremely concerned with recent legislature that has limited teaching of LGBT studies and gender studies within schools, and they vowed that they are going to fight this in all 50 states. So what that means for Florida is that DeSantis has a mortal enemy in these teachers unions, the federal ones and the local ones.
You know, they fight so hard for what they believe in, and like how many of our conservative organizations or allies fought to keep prayer in school as an example. Probably no one. They probably accepted the fact that prayer was not a thing in school anymore and moved on with their lives.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a handful of people.
Right. And these people will fight for the abortion stuff, the LGBT, whatever activism they believe in for their social justice utopia world, they'll fight for it until the very end. And it's something that, again, our people lack. Is that fighting mentality and saying, hey, you know what? You guys want your LGBT education and your abortion rights. We're going to fight to put prayer back in school. This is just an example. It's not something that I'm tied to, but in general, that's
well, I mean, it's something that we did get passed on here in Florida, and there's a reason for that. It's because you guys, and transitioning over to the advocacy work, the local advocacy work has been an eye-opener in the sense where it doesn't take a lot. These people are not used to receiving any kind of opposition whatsoever. So showing up to a school board meeting, making a phone call to a state representative, calling in or visiting a commissioner, these are things that when it's, even if it's just one, two, three, four, five people, this is historically not done before. People had completely forgotten how to be involved in the civic process of, in general, it's particularly in their local municipalities. So when you had 20 parents show up, and I've stressed this before, we would have 20 parents show up to school board meetings, and the feeling was, it's not enough, we need more people. But somehow, those 20 people here and 20 people in Broward and 20 people in West Palm and 20 people in Polk County. And what it's meant is that we've been able to really drive change within the state of Florida because the governor has been very responsive to parental rights, to what parents want. He hasn't just pulled an authoritarian ruling out of his back pocket. He's been responsive to what parents have wanted, which the school boards, because of the teachers' union, have consistently ignored. And more so has it been, and never more so has it been more obvious than within the last 2 year period since 2020, when these teachers refused to listen to parents. Actually, 2021, a year into the pandemic, parents all over the country taking to these school boards to be ignored by teachers who wanted to force vaccine mandates on their students, who wanted to force gender studies, who wanted to force CRT. And it's because parents stood up and said, absolutely not, that we're seeing this pushback, because they know. They know that parents are the only ones that can stop this.
Look at this. It says here that the union plans to spend $47 million to elect friendly candidates, promote the importance of pro-public education and pro-labor judges, lobby for or against legislation, and support state and local affiliates in ballot measure campaigns.
Ballot measure.
$47 million.
Let me explain something to you guys. The teachers union is a huge reason why the cabbage Biden is currently installed as president.
Well, they backed them.
They backed legislature for mail-in ballots in all 50 states. They backed anything that you can imagine, laws related with election integrity. The teachers union had their hands in it. And I know that I sound like a lunatic. It's been a solid year of me talking about this, where it's like the teachers union can't be the center of it all, Isabella. This sounds dumb. It's just some dumb school board meeting. It's not. The teachers union is being used as an extended arm of the Democratic federal government to impose their communist ideology within our local government, and they're coming for your children. This idea that we spent hashtagging Save the Children for the last 4 years, and that people think that that only means these it's blowing up tunnels and saving traffic children. No, there are kids being abused in our public school system, and the teachers union is going to effort to cover that up. This isn't conspiracy. Absolutely. This isn't a theory. There is actual legislation that's been passed, presidential EOs that have been passed, that would limit the record keeping of abuses that took place in school, or complaints of abuse that took place in school, so that it made it impossible to track an abuser that was being moved from school to school. Why are the teachers union advocating for laws that silence children that are being abused? And then I'll get off my soapbox on this. It really triggers me. Florida teachers hadn't gotten a raise in something like 20, 30 years or something like that. they were still the starting salary for a teacher was still $35,000 up until a few years ago. And it's Carla Matz went to negotiate with the governor. And the governor said, you don't even have to ask me twice. Here's what I want to give the teachers. And Carla Matz said no. Because why? The majority of members within the teachers union are not teachers. They're administrative staff. So she went back to Tallahassee to fight with our governor and demand that the money that they were going to give to teachers be given to everybody else. So what does that mean? That the ones who got completely forgotten about were actual teachers that are living in absolute poverty because the lunch lady and the clerical filing person needed to have a quote-unquote living wage. It's unfair. The teachers union don't care about children and they don't care about teachers.
One thing that they have here is that they passed a resolution on women rights or abortion. Mm-hmm. And some of the members were saying, hey, remove the word abortion, is too controversial. It's going to alienate some of our members that may have a moderate stance,
right?
Pro-life stance. And the president said, absolutely not. The issue is abortion, and we're leaving that word. And it's what we've also been saying, that we need to label these people as pro-abortionists. These are not women's rights, and this is absolutely not healthcare. They fight for what they stand for. They don't care if it's controversial. They don't care if it's, killing babies, or they don't care if it's giving hormone therapy to 12-year-olds to, transition them into another sex. Whereas we have our people defending why they're not far-right Latinos, or why they're not, the white extremists that they talked about.
Right, they don't care.
Bro, the only throw thing that out the window. Like, they don't care. It's not going to change their mind. They already think you are that extremist, even though you're not. Embrace it.
Yeah.
Far-right Latino summer.
Far-right Latino summer, man. That's where it is that we're at.
We're gonna have a playlist. We're going to have a lot of stuff dropping and riding the wave. And we really hope that, we kind of just not only have fun with this, but also set an example for the rest of our people to just embrace what the media gives you. If the media is going to give you free publicity, we don't have media. So if the media is going to give us publicity, even if it's bad, we're gonna ride the wave, because
we're gonna transmit it
into something great.
And you know what? We're gonna transmit it, and we're gonna take the opportunity to truly give a voice to Latinos, because we lack representation.
Absolutely.
When you've got the first lady going on TV and referencing tacos as a way of pandering to the Latino demographic, there is a huge void. And the only thing that we hope is that the Mostly Peaceful Latina brand is something that gives a voice to actual Latinos, something that you feel represented by, something that you can relate to politically. It reminds you of your childhood, your upbringing, the true representation of what being Latino, what being a Latina actually means, and not what politics has narrowed us down to.
Absolutely. But with that being said, we are wrapping up with this episode. And please don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. Share it with your friends, with your abuelitos, if they speak English. Yes. And help us grow.
Thank you guys for your support. Have a great week.
See you next week. Bye.